The ground did not rise gently here. It exploded upward. Fire broke through seawater, rock split, ash fell back into the ocean and hardened into something barely stable enough to stand on. For thousands of years, the land kept moving. It cracked, it burned, it collapsed and rebuilt itself without warning. This was not empty paradise waiting for people to arrive. It was a chain of unfinished islands, steep and sharp, where the soil could feed you one season and bury you the next. Every hill carried a memory of violence. Every valley was shaped by force. Humans came anyway. They crossed open water and stepped onto ground that could not be trusted. No roads, no safety, no certainty that tomorrow would look like today. Only heat, stone, ash, and the promise of survival if they learned fast enough. The Caribbean was born in fire. Civilization here did not grow despite that danger. It grew because people learned how to live inside it. Chapter 1. Fire Under the Sea. The Caribbean did not begin as land. It began as pressure. Deep beneath the surface, massive plates of the earth moved against each other without pause. One plate slid, another resisted, and the friction had nowhere to go. Heat built, rock softened, molten material pushed upward through fractures in the ocean floor. Water boiled away in violent bursts. Stone cracked open and spilled fire into the sea. This process did not happen once. It happened again and again, over spans of time too large for human memory. The result was not a continent rising cleanly from the water. It was a scattered chain of islands, each one born separately, each one unstable in its own way. The Caribbean plate sat trapped between larger forces. To the east, the Atlantic plate pressed forward. To the north and south, other plates shifted and scraped. Where these boundaries met, magma found pathways upward. Volcanoes formed underwater, building layer by layer. Lava cooled fast in seawater, fracturing instead of smoothing. Ash settled, hardened, and fractured again. Over time, some of these underwater mountains grew tall enough to break the surface. What emerged was jagged. Steep slopes rose quickly from the sea. There were no broad plains, no gentle rivers, no predictable ground. The land was young, and it showed. Earthquakes were constant companions. The ground shook not as a rare disaster, but as a regular reminder that nothing was finished. Slopes failed. Entire sections of islands slid into the ocean. New vents opened while others collapsed. The shape of the land could change within a single lifetime. Volcanic islands were not like limestone islands farther north and west. Limestone formed slowly from coral and marine life. It created flatter terrain, porous rock, and predictable coastlines. Volcanic islands were the opposite. They were dense, steep, and layered with ash and hardened lava. Water ran off quickly or disappeared into cracks. Soil did not exist at first. It had to be created through breakdown, erosion, and time. Ash fell in thick blankets after eruptions. Sometimes it buried everything. Sometimes it enriched the ground that remained. Lava flows carved new paths and erased old ones. Rivers were blocked or rerouted. Valleys filled, then reopened. The landscape never settled into a single shape. The Lesser Antilles formed as a curved line of fire rather than a solid bridge. Each island stood apart, separated by deep water. There was no continuous land route. Travel between islands would always require the sea. From the beginning, isolation and connection existed side by side. Some islands stayed active, others went quiet. Quiet did not mean safe. Dormant volcanoes still held pressure below the surface. Earthquakes still rippled through them. Landslides remained a threat long after eruptions ended. The land itself was dangerous before a single human foot touched it. Fresh water was uncertain. Volcanic rock does not always hold water the way sedimentary rock does. Rain either rushed downhill in sudden floods or vanished into fractures. Standing water was rare. Rivers were short and fast. Droughts could follow heavy rain without warning. Vegetation came slowly. Wind carried seeds. Birds brought others. What grew first had to survive heat, ash, and thin ground. Forests formed in stages, each layer dependent on the last. Fires from eruptions could wipe them out completely. Recovery took time measured in generations. Animal life followed the same pattern. Reptiles, birds, and small mammals arrived by chance. Some thrived, some disappeared. The ecosystem never reached full stability. It adapted instead. This instability shaped everything that followed. The land did not offer safety or predictability. It demanded attention. It forced any life that settled there to remain alert to warning signs. steam vents, sulfur smells, trembling ground, sudden changes in water flow. These were not rare events. They were part of the environment. From above, the islands might have looked beautiful, green slopes rising from blue water, clouds clinging to peaks, but that beauty hid constant risk. Beauty did not mean mercy. Eruptions varied in scale. Some were explosive, sending ash high into the sky and choking the air. Others were slower, pouring lava down slopes until it met the sea and turned to stone. Both types reshaped the land. Both left scars that lasted long after the fire cooled. Entire coastlines were built from cooled lava. Sharp, black rock replaced sand. Harbors formed where flows hardened unevenly. Other bays vanished under new rock. Navigation changed with every major eruption. The islands were never still long enough to forget their origin. Over thousands of years, volcanic activity slowed in some places. Erosion softened slopes. Ash mixed with broken rock and organic material. Soil began to form. It was dark, rich, and heavy with minerals. When rain stayed long enough, this soil could support dense growth. But this fertility came with memory. The same forces that created rich soil could destroy it overnight. An eruption could bury fields under meters of ash. A quake could crack open the ground and drain water sources. A landslide could erase an entire valley. Nothing about the land promised permanence. From a geological perspective, the Caribbean islands were experiments still in progress. They were neither fully ocean nor fully continent. They existed in a state of tension, held together by forces that could also tear them apart. This mattered long before people arrived. The shape of the islands limited where anyone could live. Steep slopes reduced usable space. Narrow coastal plains left little room to retreat from the sea. High elevations offered cooler temperatures, but greater exposure to volcanic risk. Valleys offered shelter, but could trap ash and floodwater. Every location carried trade-offs. There was no perfect ground. The sea surrounding the islands was deep and active. Currents shifted. Storms hit hard. Any connection between islands required skill and timing. The same tectonic forces that built the islands also influenced the seafloor, shaping channels and drop-offs that affected marine life and navigation. The Caribbean was not a passive backdrop waiting for history. It was an active force shaping every decision before humans even entered the picture. By the time the islands stabilized enough to sustain long-term ecosystems, they had already been tested by fire, collapse, and renewal countless times. The land carried those layers inside it. Hardened lava beneath ash, broken rock beneath soil, heat beneath everything. This layered history meant that the surface could lie. Ground that looked solid could give way. Forests could mask unstable slopes. Calm periods could end without warning. Any future inhabitants would have to learn this the hard way, or not survive at all. The Caribbean did not offer shelter first. It offered challenge. Only after fire slowed did opportunity appear. Only after destruction did fertility follow. The land that rose from the sea demanded respect before it could offer reward. And even then, it never stopped reminding anyone who lived there that it had been born in violence, and that violence had not gone away. Chapter 2. People on Unfinished Ground. When humans arrived in the Caribbean, the land had not finished becoming land. They came by water, not by accident. Open sea separated each island, and there was no single path forward. Movement required judgment. Where to land mattered. Steep cliffs offered no shelter. Rocky shores cut boats apart. The safest places were not always the most obvious. Freshwater, not beauty, decided survival. Early arrivals did not step into abundance. They stepped into uncertainty. Volcanic islands forced immediate choices. Slopes rose sharply from the coast, limiting where settlements could form. Valleys looked promising but carried risk. Ash settled there. Floodwater pooled there. Landslides moved through them when rain came hard. Higher ground offered safety from flooding, but closer proximity to volcanic vents and unstable rock. People learned quickly that the land had moods. Freshwater dictated movement inland. Springs formed where volcanic layers trapped water between hard rock and ash. These were not everywhere. Communities clustered where water appeared reliably. When a spring dried or shifted, people moved. Permanent attachment to one location was rare at first. The soil was the great contradiction. Once volcanic ash broke down and mixed with organic material, it became rich beyond expectation. Crops grew fast, yields were strong, but the same soil that fed people could suffocate them when it fell from the sky in thick layers. Farming required timing and restraint. Planting too close to eruption zones invited loss. Avoiding fertile ground meant hunger. Indigenous communities responded with flexibility, not dominance. Settlements were not built to last forever. Housing used materials that could be replaced. Stone foundations were rare where ground shifted often. Wood, reeds, and light construction allowed rebuilding after destruction. The goal was not permanence, it was recovery. Villages were positioned with escape in mind. Paths led downhill and toward the coast. Canoes were kept ready. Knowledge of which routes stayed open during ashfall or rain mattered as much as food storage. Survival planning included movement, not just defense. Agriculture adapted to uneven ground. Crops suited to volcanic soil thrived. Root crops anchored slopes and resisted wind. Gardens followed contours rather than flattening them. Terracing appeared in places where stability allowed it, but large-scale reshaping of land was rare. Forcing the land carried risk. People learned to read signs. Steam vents signaled pressure below. Changes in bird behavior mattered. Sulfur smells were taken seriously. Ground warmth meant danger. Oral knowledge passed these warnings through generations. This was not superstition. It was pattern recognition shaped by survival. Ceramics and tools reflected volcanic reality. Stone for blades and scrapers came from hardened lava. It was sharp, durable, and plentiful. Clay for pottery mixed ash and sediment, producing strong vessels suited for cooking and storage. These materials tied daily life directly to the land's origin. Fishing balanced farming risk. The sea provided consistency the land could not always offer. Marine food reduced dependence on crops vulnerable to ash and drought. Coastal access was not optional, it was insurance. Communities did not treat the sea and land as separate systems. They were one environment. Volcanic runoff enriched coastal waters. Fish followed nutrient flows. Eruptions that damaged land could temporarily improve fishing. This balance softened disaster, but never erased it. Population growth was uneven. Islands with stable volcanic cycles and consistent water supported larger communities. Others remained sparsely settled. Movement between islands redistributed people when conditions worsened. No island existed in isolation. Knowledge traveled with people. Canoe routes connected volcanic islands despite distance and danger. Exchange networks moved food, tools, and information. Which island erupted? Which valley collapsed? Which spring failed? This intelligence mattered as much as trade goods. Adaptation shaped social organization. Leadership favored those who understood land behavior. Elders who remembered eruptions carried authority. Decisions about relocation, planting, and risk management were communal. Individual control over land was limited by the land itself. Spiritual systems reflected respect rather than conquest. Volcanoes were not enemies to defeat, they were forces to live with. Ritual acknowledged danger but did not promise control. The goal was balance, not mastery. Children learned geography early, which slopes slid, which valleys flooded, which winds carried ash. Education was environmental, practical, and constant. Time itself was measured differently. Seasons mattered, but so did longer cycles of volcanic quiet and activity. Memory extended beyond one lifetime. Stories anchored knowledge across centuries. The land shaped culture through pressure. Communities did not expand endlessly. Carrying capacity was understood through experience. Overuse invited disaster. Clearing too much vegetation increased landslide risk. Draining wetlands removed buffers against floods. Sustainable practice was not ideology, it was survival math. Conflict existed but was constrained by geography. Steep terrain limited large-scale warfare. Mobility mattered more than fortification. Retreat was often wiser than resistance. The land discouraged prolonged occupation of contested ground. Volcanic material influenced art and identity. Black stone tools, dark soil, and dramatic landscapes shaped visual language. The environment was not background, it was present in everything made. Despite adaptation, loss was constant. Eruptions erased villages. Crops failed, water sources vanished, people died, communities rebuilt elsewhere. Resilience was not a slogan, it was a necessity born from repetition. Yet the land rewarded patience. Where stability held, volcanic soil produced abundance unmatched by poorer ground. Food security improved, population density increased, cultural complexity grew. The same islands that threatened life also sustained it. This tension defined Caribbean civilization before contact with the outside world. People did not conquer the volcanic islands. They negotiated with them. Every settlement was provisional. Every harvest carried risk. Every generation inherited both knowledge and uncertainty. The land fed them, but it never promised safety. It had burned before they arrived. It could burn again, and everyone living on it knew that. Chapter 3. Civilization shaped by risk. By the time Caribbean societies matured, the land had taught its rules. Volcanic geography decided where people clustered and where they did not. Islands with deep ash soils and stable slopes supported larger populations. Others remained lightly settled, used seasonally, or avoided entirely. This unevenness created a natural hierarchy across the island chain, shaped not by power alone, but by ground conditions. Trade routes followed that logic. Canoes moved between islands that could produce surplus and those that could not. Fertile volcanic islands became anchors in exchange networks. Food, stone tools, ceramics, and knowledge flowed outward. Marine goods and cultural ideas flowed back. Geography controlled traffic. Deep channels and dangerous currents limited who could connect with whom. Population density rose where volcanic soil stayed productive over long periods. These areas developed more complex social organization. Leadership structures became clearer. Ritual calendars aligned with agricultural cycles and environmental warning signs. Knowledge became institutional rather than individual. Risk did not disappear, it became normalized. Living under volcanic threat was not treated as constant crisis. It was treated as a condition of life. Communities planned around it. Settlements expanded and contracted based on recent memory of eruptions and collapses. A quiet generation invited cautious growth. A violent generation encouraged restraint. The land shaped political power. Control over fertile ground mattered, but control was temporary. No group could assume permanent ownership. A single eruption could erase advantage. This instability limited rigid class structures. Wealth existed, but it was fragile. Social systems favored redistribution and cooperation because isolation during disaster meant death. Inter-island relationships reflected this understanding. Alliances mattered more than dominance. Mobility remained essential. Even at peak population levels, Caribbean societies kept the ability to move. Environmental knowledge became inheritance. Understanding slopes, water flow, and soil behavior passed through generations as survival instruction. Elders carried authority because they remembered what the land did before. Oral history was not myth alone, it was data stored in narrative form. Volcanic terrain influenced how space was valued. High ground was not always desirable. Valleys were useful but dangerous. Coastal access mattered more than central location. The sea remained an escape route as much as a resource. This environmental pressure shaped identity. Caribbean societies defined themselves through adaptation rather than conquest. The land was not something to be subdued, it was something to be read. Respect for natural limits became cultural logic. When outside powers arrived centuries later, they encountered landscapes already optimized for productivity. Colonial systems recognized the value of volcanic soil immediately. The same fertility that sustained indigenous communities attracted plantation agriculture. Sugar, coffee, and other crops thrived in ash-rich ground. Colonial expansion followed volcanic advantage. But the cost structure changed. Where indigenous systems spread risk across mobility and diversity, plantations concentrated risk. Large populations worked fixed land. Escape routes vanished. Soil exhaustion increased. Landslide risk rose as forests were cleared. The land responded the way it always had, with collapse. Volcanic islands punished overuse. Plantations benefited from fertility, but ignored warning signs. When eruptions occurred, losses were massive. When rain came, erosion followed deforestation. The land that once fed resilient systems now amplified disaster. Modern Caribbean settlement patterns still reflect this history. Major cities cluster near fertile zones and harbors shaped by volcanic processes. Transportation routes follow terrain carved by lava and erosion. Economic centers sit on land chosen centuries earlier for survival reasons. Volcanoes remain active. Earthquakes still happen. Landslides still kill. Risk has not left the region. It has been integrated. Contemporary Caribbean culture carries this inheritance. Flexibility, improvisation, readiness to rebuild. These traits are not abstract. They are environmental responses encoded into social behavior. The ground continues to shape daily life. Water management remains critical. agriculture still benefits from volcanic soil while managing erosion. Disaster preparedness reflects long memory. Evacuation routes follow ancient paths. Coastal reliance persists because it always has. The Caribbean is often described through beauty alone. That description misses the core truth. This civilization was not shaped by calm land or gentle climate. It was shaped by constant negotiation with terrain that could fail without warning. The land rewarded knowledge and punished arrogance. Volcanic islands forced people to think in terms of systems rather than permanence. Nothing lasted forever. Everything required attention. That mindset endured. Across centuries, Caribbean societies learned that survival did not come from dominating the land. It came from understanding it, respecting its limits, and staying ready to move when it turned. The ground beneath the Caribbean is still unfinished. Pressure still builds below. Fire still exists under the sea. Civilization here was forged not in spite of that reality, but because people learned how to live with it.